With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn 2% cash rewards on what you want, like season tickets to watch your favorite team, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like paying for parking. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.
Hello there, I'm Chuck Todd. This is the Chuck Toddcast. We've said it for weeks now, Democrats and Republicans are running virtually parallel campaigns. Republicans are focused on a couple of core issues like crime and the economy, and Democrats are focused on their core issues of abortion rights and protecting the democracy. But there's one group of elected officials that don't have the luxury of splitting apart those issues. It's our nation's governors and mayors. And I'm joined here at our NBC affiliate WKYC in their studio here. But I'm joined by the mayor of Cleveland, Justin Bibb. He was sworn into office in January of this year in a city where police reform, crime are obviously big issues for these voters. And this is a city that wants to continue to revitalize itself economically. Mr. Mayor, welcome to the Toddcast.
Thank you, Chuck. Welcome to the great city of Cleveland, Ohio.
I love being in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And there's you know, Cleveland is a city that wants to reinvent itself. And I think has done a pretty good job of it over the last 20 years, but wants to do more.
Yeah.
Is that fair? Fair way to describe it?
Absolutely. It was a big reason why I ran for mayor. I ran on a platform of really making sure that we had bold, dynamic, visionary leadership, particularly in this era coming out of COVID-19, that I think is the era of the mid-sized city. And so we are big enough where policy change will make a big difference, but small enough to innovate and experiment on big, bold, new ideas for the whole country.
Look, the biggest thing you've got to do is expand your tax base, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I always say that a mayor, in some ways, you're the chief economic developer officer.
And the chief sales officer.
For these things. Yeah. So what do you think is the best way to expand the tax base here in Cleveland?
Be as aggressive as I can on talking about the great amenities and assets we have in Cleveland. We have the second largest theater district outside of New York City, right here in Playhouse Square. Okay. One of the world's best orchestras in the Cleveland Orchestra.
Yes, it is. When I was a music major in college and thought I was good enough and it was the Cleveland Orchestra it was like New York Philharmonic, Cleveland Orchestra.
Right up there.
You know, right up there.
And we are the city that takes care of the sickest people in the world at the Cleveland Clinic. Those are great things to build on, and I'm looking forward to telling that story to the world as we come out of COVID-19.
It's hard not to think about Cleveland, talk to a mayor, and not think about the issue of crime and policing. And obviously, you tell me, but I think that's one of the reasons you're mayor.
Absolutely. This is very personal for me. I'm a son of a police officer.
Okay.
And many of my family members and members of my family have been victims of violent crime. And so I get it on both sides. And, you know, we in Cleveland, I think we are leading the most progressive police reform agenda in the country. We are one of the only cities in history that have been under two consecutive consent decrees.
Yeah.
And so we are doing the hard work of changing the culture of accountability of policing. We just negotiated a brand new police contract with our police union, got it done in just 4 months to pay them more, to keep more of our cops on the street. But we are also executing the implementation of the toughest independent civilian oversight board of policing in America. It's a mandate that voters voted for last year. Mm-hmm. So we want to make sure we get more community voices around the table to improve training and improve the culture of policing. And I think we're going to show America how to get it done right here in Cleveland, Ohio.
Look, this is what everybody says they want out of a police force. And they both want to trust the police officers to do the right thing. They want crime off their streets. At the same time, there's still this built-in distrust, particularly in African-American communities. Being the son of a cop, you tell me, what's a myth that you'd love to see blown up in the national media, meaning that doesn't sort of misses the mark here when we're trying to cover this issue?
Let me tell you what I learned growing up on one of the toughest blocks in the city of Cleveland. My late grandmother would say, I want the police to show up on time when I call them, but respect my rights as a hardworking, tax-paying citizen of this country. Mm-hmm. That should be the North Star for every Democrat and Republican or independent, whether you're a mayor, governor, or member of Congress. And that's the basic ethos of what every American should deserve in policing. And this narrative that Democrats are anti-police, but if you're pro-police, that means you're really not for social justice or equity. It's a zero-sum debate, which I think clouds our ability as a country to come together. And as Democrats, we can be pro-police and pro-police accountability and make sure we keep our community safe and secure. And that's my job as Mayor of Cleveland.
What do you think is the biggest impediment? I mean, it seems as if you talk to rank and file police officers. They want the accountability. The police unions are another story. Is how, I mean, look, you got a contract in 4 days. That may tell, maybe you have a good personal relationship, but how do you get the convince the unions that police accountability is an anti-police?
A lot of listening. I think that's the biggest thing.
What do they believe you're not hearing, or that people aren't hearing?
They would say that if you have too much police accountability, you're hamstringing us from being able to do our job. I would say the reverse. If we don't show the public that we have good guardrails and good tools in place to root out the bad apples in our police department, it undermines our ability to build that trust, to give them tools they need to fight crime. And so creating a culture where we can listen, we can come together, talk about our differences, and bring all of those to the bargaining table is what we did in Cleveland. And it's the model I think other cities need to follow in the future.
Let's talk about prosecutors.
Yeah.
And the prosecution aspect of things. There's a big debate about cash bail. Sometimes I think it's a little bit of a red herring, but where are you on this?
I certainly think that perpetual violent criminals who have multiple gun arrests or multiple convictions, who have known to be members of the community that partake in violent criminal activity, should not be on our street. But for those nonviolent offenses, absolutely we should have bail reform. And it's important, though, that we have prosecutors and judges who are going to enforce the law. And we've seen, particularly in Cleveland, too many repeat offenders get back on the street.
How do you stop that part of it? I mean, because you want to do bail reform, at the same time, bail reform may benefit the wrong people.
We have to get back to common sense public policy when it comes to criminal justice reform. Right now, we're just operating in the extremes, unfortunately. You know, I'm a Democratic mayor in a red state,
right?
And I don't have the luxury to operate in the extremes. I need tools to keep the city safe, but also tools to hold police accountable, hold judges and prosecutors accountable too, because if I don't, I'm going to hear it at the barbershop, the grocery store, and at church. And so common sense public policy with common sense Democrats and common sense Republicans is the best thing we can do to see real change on this issue across the country.
You bring up a point that I think is an extraordinarily challenging time in our due to polarization and political polarization. Here you are, you just talked about being a Democratic mayor in a red state. I've covered Mike DeWine for 30 years. I'm guessing you personally have a good personal relationship with Mike DeWine.
Absolutely.
It's hard not to have a good personal relationship with Mike DeWine. He's just a nice guy. He's the guy you want as your neighbor. He's the guy that's going to take your garbage cans in if you're not home.
Exactly.
I say this. You know, and I think he would probably be more forthcoming in reaching out publicly if he thought it wasn't bad politics. So how do you get the things that you need Cleveland to get from a Republican legislature, a Republican governor, who thinks some of their constituents think that any dollar that goes to Cleveland will somehow benefit Democrats rather than benefiting the state of Ohio?
We have to ground the conversation in what's in the best interest of everybody. Governor DeWine and I don't agree on a whole lot of issues, but we do agree on making sure we have more investments in my real-time crime center in Cleveland so I can stop crime before it starts. Governor DeWine believes in the importance of funding violence interrupters in Cleveland so we can, you know, really tackle where we're seeing gun violence perpetuate in many parts of our city. And so on the things that we find alignment, the governor and I are strongly focused on. You know, we just worked with the governor and lieutenant governor of the state to bring Aer Lingus to Cleveland so we can have a direct flight from Cleveland to Dublin to make sure we have world-class airfare and air travel in the city of Cleveland. And so on the things we agree on, I'm going to find a good partner. I don't care if they're Republican or from the Green Party, but if they share my belief.
But there's going to be some things you guys agree on. That he can't publicly support.
And that's the...
And maybe vice versa. You tell me, have you run into this in the other way?
I mean, you know, I don't agree with the governor on choice.
Right.
You know, I believe that the people of this country and the women of Cleveland deserve to have reproductive freedom. And I will continue to fight this legislature and this governor to make sure I have the tools I need to give women safe, reliable access to reproductive health care, because it is a human right and their choice. But just because the governor and I don't agree on abortion rights doesn't mean we can't work on violent crime or economic development. And I think that's what's missing in Washington, D.C. right now. You know, it's been a long time since we've seen true bipartisan leadership in D.C. You know, we're seeing it now with the CHIPS bill. We saw it with the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We saw it with the Inflation Reduction Act. So this is could be a breakthrough moment, but I'm as a mayor, I don't have the luxury of being hyper-partisan.
Right.
And
well, you can be.
Yeah.
But you won't get anything done.
I won't get anything done.
Right. I mean, I think we've seen some mayors around the country who, or even, you know, I look at what happened in San Francisco. Well, I'm not going to get into individual people, but they sort of, they got in ideologically and they tried to govern ideologically and they realized it didn't work.
And I think, Chuck, my worldview on politics is really informed on how I got elected. I was not a career politician. I was at
35. You better not.
No,
you may in 50 years. You may look back and say that.
We'll see. But I was at probably -1% in the polls when I announced January of 2021. And what I did as a candidate was a couple things. Number one, I listened a whole lot about what the residents of Cleveland wanted, and I showed up everywhere. And what I learned are a couple of things. Number one, you know, voters want elected officials who are going to do what they said they were going to do on the campaign trail. Voters want elected officials who are always going to listen and get feedback. And voters want you to be present. And when you make a mistake, hey, I made a mistake. Here's what I learned. Here's how it informs how I'm going to do the job better at the next go around. And to me, that's essentially how you govern with compassion and how you govern in a way to bring people together. And that's the way I'm trying to govern as the mayor of this great city right now.
There's a lot of former mayors that are living. Who's given you whose advice have you leaned on the most?
The former mayor of Cleveland, Michael R. White, was one of the first major elected officials to endorse my campaign last year. The former mayor of New York, Mike Bloomberg, was just part of his new mayor school in New York earlier this year, and he had some really good advice for us. And the former mayor of Philadelphia, Michael Nutter, also gave some really great advice.
What was some of the advice that you've taken and implemented?
I think that the best word of advice they gave me was, now that you're elected as mayor, be the mayor. Be the mayor.
Meaning
what? When you make a decision, be confident in the decision.
Even if personally you may not be.
Yeah.
But act like
be confident in the decision. Know your rationale. Be willing to debate why you made the decision. And always remember why you're in office.
You know, the three mayors you picked were all, quote, change mayors. Right? And I remember those, all of their races very well, and they were all promising sort of whatever people were unhappy about in the moment, and was sort of like, in many ways, particularly Michael Nutter, he was trying to break the machine. Philadelphia had a whole political machine, and I would argue, you know, Michael Bloomberg had his own way of doing it. He was trying to break up the parties. But in either way, they were trying to change a paradigm. It's not easy. And in fact, more fail than don't. What is your bar for success after a term that tells you you're doing what you promised you would do?
If Cleveland is a place where young people want to move to versus leave, that's progress. If Cleveland is a place where residents feel more safe, more secure, where police respect their rights, but show up on time and keep the community going in a better direction, that's progress. If Cleveland is known as a destination for immigrants and refugees to start and live out the American dream, that's progress. And to me, you know, one of the things I get excited about is, you know, one day Cleveland being on the cover of The Economist magazine as America's most livable city.
Interesting.
Okay. Right? Changing the arc and the narrative of Cleveland. We have always been at the backbone of what's been great about America. The world's first billionaire, Rockefeller, Cleveland. Mm-hmm. You don't get the EPA Act and the Clean Water Act without Carl Stokes, the first elected black mayor of a major American city.
First time NBC did an exit poll was for that race.
There we go.
It was a national story when Carl Stokes became mayor.
And so I have some big shoes to fill. Mm-hmm. But I think in this era of the mid-sized city, Cleveland could really be a leader in charting the next story of America's story. And I want to make sure that we are at the top of that list over the next several years.
Let's do a little politics.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something, and you tell me why I'm wrong. If Tim Ryan doesn't win, it proves Democrats can't win in Ohio statewide.
False.
Okay, why?
Well, as we saw in my race, if you can turn out working class and progressive Democrats and attract independent voters in the big cities in Ohio, I think that's a pathway.
To 51%?
I do.
You think the numbers are there?
I do.
I mean, because do you think Tim Ryan is running that campaign?
I do. And I think Tim Ryan has the right message for the moment right now that we need in Washington, D.C.
Well, that's what I mean. So if he loses, how do you explain it?
That we didn't turn out enough people to vote.
So you won't see it as a, boy, we hit a wall.
No.
In your mind, this is not hitting a wall. Because a lot of national Democrats
are looking at this race. Yeah.
Not only that, there's a reason they haven't written a check. You know, and they don't believe it.
I feel something on the ground for Tim Ryan's campaign. Mm-hmm. I was with the congressman and Senator Cory Booker at my church a couple weeks ago, stumping for Tim Ryan. Mm-hmm. And Tim has the ability to appeal to rural voters in Ohio, but also working class Democratic voters across the state, too. And that's the right kind of message we need to have.
Let me flip the script. What's your take on why some working class African Americans, not a lot, but have at least flirted with the Trump wing of the GOP?
Number one, we've stopped engaging in an authentic way with working class and middle class black Democratic voters.
I've heard this from a lot of Democratic lawmakers, not Democratic strategists, who all live online too much.
And I agree, because Twitter is consuming too much of our time.
Yeah.
We're trying to appeal to the Twitter part of the Democratic Party, but not the everyday black voter who's going to church every Sunday.
By the way, Elizabeth Warren did not win the Democratic primary.
No, but she won the Twitter primary.
And it's one of these things. Yeah. She finished third in her own state, you know, during the presidential primary. And a lot of it was... Yeah. They believed their own version of the truth, and it turned out not to be right.
What the problem has been, our party has failed to do what Bill Clinton did and folks like Harold Ford and others. We forgot to talk about wealth creation. We forgot to talk about economic freedom. We forgot to talk about how you build a pathway to the upper middle class in the American dream. And we ceded that argument to the Republican Party. We got to take back that message as a party. And this is something that Congressman O'Connor and I were talking about on Friday. How do we be the party of wealth creation once again? But also we can be the party of good progressive policies that uplift people from poverty to prosperity. Because that was my lived experience.
Yeah.
You know, my dad was a police officer.
Hope, growth, and opportunity.
That was
the 90s. Yeah. Hope, growth, and opportunity. That was Bill Clinton, you know.
And you see what Wes Moore is doing in Maryland right now, right? Work, wealth, wages.
Right.
That's a good message.
That's a way to fight back on the S word, right? Socialism.
Absolutely. Because I believe in the free market economy, but I believe in smart, thoughtful regulations to make sure that we keep the free market economy in check when it gets out of line.
You mentioned something, and I want to go back to it because I find this fascinating. You have a real-time crime center, right? You're trying to anticipate crime. We also, I don't want to assume this because I'm now older than I wish I was, but there was a movie called Minority Report. You know, obviously,
I remember that
you know, this dystopian future, right? You could predict people, you know, this line, real-time crime center, using data analytics, using AI. That's on one hand, you think, oh, that could be smart. On the other hand, that's scary to some people. How are you creating this real-time crime center with respecting privacy a little bit and not letting AI decide who's a criminal?
I couldn't agree more with the importance of having the right guardrails and rules in place to address any civil liberty or privacy concerns. But at the same time, when the residents I talk to, where we see the highest rates of gun violence and violent crime, they're asking me for more cameras, more surveillance, more technology, and more tools to keep guns off the street, to keep their grandchildren safe and their children safe. And so we can have good regulations, but also when residents say they want more cameras, guess what? I'm giving them more cameras.
Look, when people were trying to understand why crime was going down in the first 10 years of this century, and they couldn't really fully explain it, I've always thought it's the fact that more petty criminals think they can get caught now.
Yeah.
Right? Because they know you never know where there's a surveillance camera. And ultimately, that might be a good thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, I worry about that fine line between police state, where everybody's seeing what
and
you're
doing. No one truly wants a big brother, but here's one thing.
Cameras at ATM machines stop people from mugging people at ATM machines.
And here's the one thing I think anybody can agree with. No one wants to walk down their street and live with fear. Right? And you don't know what that feeling feels like until you've lost someone to violent crime or you've been a victim of violent crime yourself.
Yeah.
I've seen it. And I've seen the importance of having the right technology in place to keep guns off the street, to trace where these guns are coming from, to keep our city safe.
All right. I'm going to end what should be light, but it actually, I think, is not when you're a mayor. And that is the relationship with your sports teams and the sports owners.
Yeah.
Because I say this and I believe, and this isn't, there's nothing you can do about this, and I wish the sports leagues actually created community boards to help decide whether somebody is worthy of being an owner representing that city's team.
Yeah.
Okay. And I respect the fact that you got to work with all of these owners, so I'm not going to get into the individual. Mm-hmm. But if the leagues, do you think the league should work with the civic leadership of a city during ownership changes?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have three major sports teams in Cleveland. That's an amazing asset.
But what they do ends up reflecting on the city, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. It does.
And how do you say that to these teams? Do they fully appreciate it?
I think all the owners that I've talked to in Cleveland respect my candor as mayor and have a shared interest in my agenda to move Cleveland forward.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen the impact that the NBA has had in my agenda. You know, I did a partnership with the Cleveland Cavaliers just this year to bring back midnight basketball for the first time in years in the city. And the Cleveland Cavaliers G League team offered tryouts to five of the youth that we had.
That's awesome.
For their G League team.
Yeah.
Right? We're changing lives. Mm-hmm. And I think we as mayors, we have to find innovative ways to bring them to the table, to partner, to really enhance our agenda.
Look, these fan bases are great.
Yeah. Right?
I mean, that's the thing.
Yeah.
This is not about the fans, right? I say this about a lot of, from Washington, I argue I've got a couple of sports owners that are problematic. And it really bothers me that they think they own something. It's like, no, you're a custodian.
It's a public asset.
The only reason, yes, you have the fine, but you just bought a seat at the civic leadership table.
Yeah.
But you're at the civic leadership table, whether you like it or not.
Just like Green Bay,
you know.
I would love if every resident could be a stock owner.
Cleveland is a perfect type of, the Browns are the type of franchise that would make a lot of
perfect
sense.
I mean, everyone has an investment.
That's right.
Right? And everyone gets a true ROI.
And you want to talk about a middle-class city that's able to build themselves around
this. I think it's a brilliant idea.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
maybe add that for the second term.
There you go. But more importantly, do you expect LeBron to finish his career at Cleveland?
I hope so. Here's my prediction.
His son gets drafted, right? Bronny gets drafted by the Cavs.
Here's my prediction.
Yeah.
I want Bronny to do 1 year at Ohio State.
Okay.
And then he does 1 year at Ohio State, comes to the Cavs. Yeah. LeBron retires as a Cleveland Cavalier with his son.
I think it's, I feel like we're seeing it, although I think the new owner of the Las Vegas expansion NBA team may have a problem with that person playing in Cleveland when he may decide he has to play for his own team.
We'll see.
We'll see. Mr. Mayor, this was great.
Thank you, Chuck.
I learned a lot.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Chuck Toddcast from Meet the Press. Today's episode was produced by Elias Miller and Matt Rivera. The theme music composed by Spoke Media. Meet the Press Now is live every day at 4 p.m. Eastern on NBC News Now. And you can find NBC News Now easily anywhere you want. Google, type it in, YouTube, any app that does streaming television, you name it, or just turn your Samsung TV on. New episodes are live on NBC News Now at 4 p.m. every day, and then it's on demand. We also have Meet the Press Reports. We're in the middle of season 5. You can always get that on NBC News Now at 10:30 p.m. And of course, it's available on demand on Peacock the next day. And then the big show's available every Sunday morning on your local NBC station. So thanks for listening, and until we upload again.
With the Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card, you can earn unlimited 2% cash rewards on purchases you want and purchases you need. That means you earn on what you want, like trying out that new workout class, and 2% cash rewards on what you need, like a foam roller for your sore muscles. That's the beauty of the Active Cash Credit Card. It's ready when you are, with unlimited 2% cash rewards. The Wells Fargo Active Cash Credit Card. That's real life ready. Terms apply. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/activecash.